Hey, welcome in, everybody. That one will get you woken up on a Monday morning. Jaguars today kicking off right here on this Monday, brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. He's back. No, I'm not talking about Duval Doom. We only let him come in about once every 6 months. Fat Tony.
That's all we can take.
He's tan, rested, and ready. Back from his vacation. You're not any particularly much tanner than
no,
you.
No, I mean, I spent a lot of time outside, but I...
Did you? Ball games and the like?
I don't know how far I walked over the course of the end of last week, but if you've ever been to D.C. doing the vacation thing, it is a mile from everywhere is where you want to be, and I don't want to take a cab for a mile, so because I'm a young man, I'm like, I'll walk.
A mile, right. Even I could walk a mile.
Well, you're walking a mile everywhere, and when you go half a mile to get to one place, and then you're like, well, the next spot I want to hit is only a mile away, so you walk that. Well, now it's a mile and a half back to wherever you got to get to get back to
good math.
A place where you want to lay down.
Maybe though, you string them all out, and ultimately you just take a cab back?
No.
At the end, no?
No cabs.
Not the case?
No cabs. I walked everywhere, and I did see a lot of sports. I was at the Nationals game on Friday night where the lights kept going out. Three times a particular light tower went out, and we were forming packs in the stands as society was crumbling around me at the baseball game. But
was it now?
No, it was fun, and watching the Nationals fans really get into their own team was kind of fun too, because everybody was frustrated that was at that game, because three light towers went out, and because whatever the rules are in baseball, I still didn't look them up, they couldn't continue play. So you could still see the field fine. It was light enough that they could have played baseball, and they brought everybody in, and for about an hour we're just sitting there waiting. They put another game on the big screen. We were watching Mets and Cardinals on the big screen.
In the stadium.
At the Nationals game.
Yes.
Right. So then everybody comes back out on the field. They play an inning. And then, bam, same light tower goes down. So those of us who stuck around through the second delay, about 45 minutes, where we got to see, again, a couple innings of Mets and Cardinals on the big screen. And then the third time it went down, you know Escobar, who had hit a go-ahead home run for the Nationals in the bottom of the sixth inning, actually fell to his knees on the field. Like, when the light tower went down...
enough is enough.
He just fell to his knees and looked at the umpire, and they finally called the thing. So I was there for that on Friday night and then went to the soccer on... Was that Saturday? That was only 2 days ago?
I think it was Saturday, yeah.
Feels like a week.
And it's only like... It's not like they only had to wait 5 days for baseball, you know, with the All-Star break.
I know!
It was the first game they had now at the new extended All-Star break, or relatively new.
And this may be the only time I ever go to that ballpark. Right? Like, I've never been to Nationals Park before. I've never been to D.C.
still
before.
A notch in your belt.
It may be the only time I ever go to that ballpark. I saw six innings of action. And I saw all the sights while I was up there, too. A bunch of the museums and the monuments. And even went to the Kennedy Performing Arts Center for the Book of Mormon on Thursday night. So, I packed so much.
So you went to the Smithsonian?
Yeah. It's actually split up into a bunch of museums.
Yeah, I know.
But I went to the Air and Space Museum, which was cool. I went to the Natural History Museum, where they got the full T-Rex and a full Triceratops, and among thousands of other things in there. Saw the Hope Diamond wandering through there. Went to the American History Museum, which is right next to the Natural History Museum, and the Holocaust Memorial Museum, which was, man, that was the toughest hour and a half of my week. Honestly, was going through that museum and everything that they had in there, and went to Arlington National Cemetery as well. So I hit it all in 3 days.
All the high points.
Yeah, which is,
like,
you know, like I said, I walked a lot.
You do Ford's Theater?
No.
FBI building?
Didn't get to
that's
the FBI.
A fun one. The FBI building's a fun one because you see a lot of...
Maybe next time.
A lot of the crazy stuff.
But went
crazy
to Baltimore, too. I mean, because that's where the soccer game was.
Right.
So I was in downtown Baltimore for a couple hours as well.
Now, what was the final score of this soccer game?
They won 6-0.
See, now, I remember the game was on.
Were you waiting on me to say nil?
Well, no, I wasn't waiting on you to say nil.
Were you trying to bait me?
I was waiting to see how disappointed you were, because I know how you hate a good American blowout in soccer, how that takes away from your enjoyment.
I don't hate blowouts. When it was announced that Cuba was going to be the opponent, which I don't know who they're going to play when I buy the tickets for this thing or plan this entire trip. I know they're going to wind up playing a third-place team from another group in all likelihood. So when Cuba got announced as the opponent, I was a little disappointed because Cuba's not going to give the U.S. a game at all. They stink. Cuba's awful. And from the moment that the game started, you could tell it was just going to be blowout city. And U.S. wound up winning 6-0. I did see Clint Dempsey score a hat trick, his first hat trick in a U.S. jersey. So that's kind of cool. The second game was really good. Haiti and Jamaica was a really good game. And Jamaica wound up winning 1-0. U.S. plays them in the semifinals of the Gold Cup on Wednesday night.
All right. Well, I wasn't sure you're going to be able to withstand staying there for the whole game when I saw it get out of hand. I know you're
No.
You're one of these guys who much rather see a 1-0.
But it was cool. They opened up behind Camden Yards. I forget what the name of the actual road is, but they opened it up. It's in the outfield of Camden Yards over there, which is right next to the football stadium too. And so I'm walking to the football stadium. They got all that opened up, so I got to eat over there at Dempsey's at Camden Yards. I had so much fun. I am completely exhausted. I needed one more day to really get recovered and ready to go for another week. I got up on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. The next time that I went to sleep was Sunday morning at about noon yesterday is when I got to bed, because I had a 6 a.m. flight and I had a rental car that I had to return from. I was in Alexandria, south of D.C. was where my hotel was. So I drove home from the soccer game, got to my hotel about midnight. I needed to be up at like 3:30 to go do the airport thing, and I was like, I will be a mess. Like, if I just sleep for 3 hours, I know me, I can't drive. So I was like, I'm just staying up. And so I stayed up the entire night, drove back up to Baltimore, and didn't see a bed until noon. So I was up for like 27 hours. My parents, who picked me up at the airport, I was a zombie.
It's a grueling life for Fat Tony.
Yeah, I was a zombie. I need another day.
You didn't see the look on Osier's face as he walked in behind you a moment ago, rolling his eyes at how tough you had it.
As I turn the corner, I hear, after 8 days off, I needed another day.
Yes. You know, well, the thing is,
the longest day of my vacation was the last one.
the thing is, though, not all of us can roll in at 10:03
right.
for Jaguars today on Monday morning, John. So we don't get that extra rest. You know, we have long days around here, Tony and I.
Yes, you do.
They get started.
I was just thinking last week, boy, what a long day Dempsey had.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. He's down here for at least 3 to 3.5 hours every morning.
That's kind of the talk in the building.
Whether he needs to be or not.
Plus, if I could have pulled one more day off, I would have been home watching this final round of the British Open.
Right, exactly. Which is not so terrible that we're sitting here in the studio watching. You have the leaderboard up in front of you.
I do not.
Louis Oosthuizen. I've heard his name officially pronounced 15 different ways, I think, since he burst on the scene. But nevertheless, the last I looked, he was 13 under par, a shot in front of a big pack of guys, including Jordan Spieth, who's teeing off right now, I think on number 4, and ripping one right down the middle. Your boy Paul Dunn, Tony, your amateur.
Is it Paul? Did we decide it was Paul?
It is Paul Dunn. Tony went with Tyler Dunn, who I think is a Green Bay Packer writer.
Yeah, thank you.
And then I tried Adam Dunn.
He went with Adam Dunn.
Who was a slugger.
That was incorrect as well. You gotta add the E for Paul Dunn.
That's right.
Paul Dunn came out today. Hit one in the middle of the fairway. Looked pretty good. And then you've got that little, is it the Swillican Burn? Is that what they call it? I don't know what that little tributary of water that comes right in front of the first green at St. Andrews. But nevertheless, he came up short of it, which probably told you he had some nerves. Promptly made bogey on the opening hole, drove it then where he thought was out of bounds. It looked like he drove it to the practice green, the putting green.
Yep.
Is where he was, but it was technically inbounds. Had to hit a provisional, hit that one right. In fact, he lost his provisional, I think, but found his original ball.
Yeah, it was the tee that he found, yeah.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, hey, amateur, you're probably not winning the British Open, right?
But
only show of nerves.
Even if he blows up today, I don't watch a whole lot of golf. But that was cool watching that yesterday.
Oh, it was cool. I mean, there's no question about it. And I think it brings in just into focus how good Jordan Spieth is. This guy who looks like, you know, your little brother who's 13 years old, Paul Dunn from Ireland, amateur, he's a year older than Jordan Spieth.
Right.
Who's going for his third consecutive major championship and currently at 12 under par. Mark Leishman with his third birdie in 4 holes to start the day.
Yeah.
And he's at 12 under par.
This is crazy.
Give me the crowded leaderboard right now.
You got Oosthuizen at 13 under through 2 holes today. Anthony Wall, Zach Johnson, Mark Leishman, Padraig Harrington, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day. All at 12 under par. So, 2 strokes back is a tie for 8th right now with Ashley Chesters, who's another amateur, Adam Scott, who's 11 under, and Sergio Garcia, 11 under as well. Adam
Where's
Scott,
Scobie
205.
On that list?
Scobie's
third place.
Eight?
Not there.
All right. Finished third place. As Blake Bortles said, he's full of crap, I believe was his quote to Dan Hicken when Scobie told Hicken last week he thinks he can win the thing. And Blake Bortles said, no, Scobie's full of crap, was his on-air quote about his chances to win. Scobie was in the lead.
He is, but not on that subject.
Correct. Yeah. Well, he had a chance, certainly, to win it. He took the lead into Sunday at the American Century Celebrity Tournament. Blake Bortles, by the way, finishing 89th out of 91 golfers there, nestled firmly between Larry the Cable Guy and Charles Barkley. So that's where Blake Bortles...
Kim Alexis, though.
What's that?
He finished ahead of Kim Alexis.
Though, is that who was in last place?
Yeah, she was.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, when I was in college, she was,
she was a big deal.
Yeah.
Oh, she still is Kim Alexis.
Oh, yeah.
She may not be the one you remember from college, I'm sure you remember her fondly nonetheless. But, yeah, Scobie put on a show, got a little TV time for himself on the weekend, certainly.
I bet he hated that.
And played very well. I'm sure he did. Right? It's kind of cool, though. Out of 11 guys, there are only 11 NFL players represented in the field, and two of them were Jacksonville Jaguars. So it's good to see opposite ends of the spectrum, but good to see Scobie get a little good pub out there. Speaking of 11 golfers over par yesterday. Dustin Johnson, one of them at the British Open. You know, look, can we all just grant that all of these guys are so much better at what they do than we'd ever dream of being? But doesn't mean that Dustin Johnson, for being a world-class player, is not a world-class choking dog on the golf course. Oh, my goodness, man. This guy, here he is with the lead on Sunday. Granted, it's only the third round on a day where everybody's going low, and he shoots over par yesterday, 3 over, and has been brutal to start today. Had 5 bogeys in the first 9 holes.
Yeah, he's
today.
2 over today, again, on a day where everybody's scoring.
Right. Everybody's putting up at least, decent numbers, few under par. Dustin Johnson just blowing it. By the way, Jason Day, as well as he's played, doesn't get the same rap because he hasn't been right there and having it, ripped out of his hands, so to speak, right at the end of a tournament a couple of times like Johnson's done. This is the 7th time he's taken a lead into the final round of a major championship, and he's still seeking his first victory.
Yep.
So 6 previous occasions, couldn't close the deal. That was the impressive thing about Tiger. Tiger, like his first 13 majors, something like that, he had the lead going into Sunday. He was 13 for 13. He held the lead every single time. And
yeah,
then
it's hard
people
to
complained
remember
and
now
come
how
back from
unbeatable
behind.
That felt at the time.
He was. He was totally.
You just, when he got the lead,
it was
assumed
over.
He was going to pull away, and you were shocked if somebody can. I remember there was that one, I guess it was the PGA where, I'm drawing a blank, but a name kind of came out of nowhere. That
Who's the guy, Tony? It didn't even speak. Who's the guy to beat him at the PGA? Finally beat the streak. Asian guy. Well, I can't think of his name. You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
Well, I
don't
know if
he won another time on the PGA Tour.
But you were shocked when somebody could sort of start going toe-to-toe.
Oh, maybe you're talking about Bob May.
I think that's what it was.
Like during the height of Tiger's brilliance,
right.
Bob
and
May took him to a playoff.
Yeah, and you remember being shocked because there was clearly a difference in level. Every once in a while, a guy comes along and looks like he's playing a different sport than his competitors. And for a while, obviously that was Tiger.
Sure, absolutely. Jordan Spieth, doesn't do it as spectacularly as Tiger did. Doesn't blow you away with his, his length or any one aspect of his game. He's just so damn consistent, man. He's putting the pressure on once again. He's just hit another green, I think the 4th green there. So he's going to have a,
maybe a
20-foot birdie putt.
When I'm curious
to see
where
what
he
happens
is in a major. I mean, that's sort of.
Hey!
I'm not a big golf guy, but with Spieth, you turn it on to watch it, and when you see him shoot a 66 yesterday, 67, and get back in it, it feels like it did.
Sure. I told Mike.
Absolutely.
I walked in today. I told Mike I was getting ready to go out on Thursday, and I was watching the tournament while I was in my hotel room, and I was like, I bet there are people for the first time in 15 or 20 years that are turning on a tournament and they are saying, where is blank? And the blank is not Tiger. Like, I bet that for the first time in like 15 years, there are a lot of people that are experiencing
that.
They
did it this weekend with Scobie, but that wasn't a major. So it's a different feel, but I get
it. Sure. And I think it was Y.E. Yang.
That's who it was, Y.E. Yang.
Yeah.
That's who it was. That's who I was thinking. I don't think that's who John was thinking of earlier. But nonetheless, we'll keep an eye on the British Open ongoing while we're on the air.
Scobie
today.
Update.
It is, right. We'll tie it right in.
I'm talking
Scobie golf weekend. When you're talking golf training camp, can't hear soon enough.
I'm throwing out some inside bombs.
Right.
Tiger was good.
Look, there is some JAG news. Ace Sanders got released on Friday. We'll get into that. And that dovetails with the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships question of the day. To my knowledge, I believe this is the first Dave Caldwell draft pick that's been released by this team, right? I mean, other guys have ended up on the practice squad and hung around. Chris Smith is a guy like that.
It feels like Jeremy Harris was off and on something.
I'm not talking about, but was he off the practice squad entirely too?
No,
what I'm saying. Either on the roster or the practice squad, still property of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
He may have been on IR that first year. I'm remembering that wrong. I don't think Jeremy Harris is actually
right. I believe that Ace is the first guy officially cut outright and let go
right.
by the Jags, not retained on the practice
right,
squad.
Right, without the relative certainty that he'd be back on the practice squad. Which is what the case was with Chris Smith last year. You knew they wanted to keep him around. It was more roster management
right.
type stuff as a rookie, which happens with lower round draft picks sometimes.
So we ask you today to search your brain and tell us who's the next Dave Caldwell draft pick over the last 3 years that's in the biggest trouble, the hottest seat going into training camp, whose job is in the most jeopardy in terms of making the roster. Zach Johnson, with his fourth birdie in seven holes, now tying Louis Oosthuizen for the lead at the British Open at 13 under par. We'll keep you posted all morning long. We'll welcome your calls as well. If you want to talk Jaguar football, go around the NFL. 641-1010 is the number. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at John Osier, and at 1010XL Fat Tony. Hop on board. Monday's brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Out of the shotgun, dumps it off for Ace Sanders, makes the catch, gets around one, Sanders still going into the end zone, touchdown, Jacksonville. First receiving touchdown of the season for Ace Sanders, first touchdown of his career.
Chris Jones will punt for the first time today. He's averaging 46 yards a punt. The left footer gets it away. That is a high punt. And that's a good one. Ace Sanders fielded his own 14. He fumbled the ball. Ace fumbled the ball. The ball is on the ground. The ball is still out there, and Dallas is going to have it. Ace fumbled it, and Dallas is going to have it at the 5-yard line. He never saw it, and it wound up being recovered by the Dallas Cowboys.
That's some of the good and the bad of Ace Sanders' brief Jaguar career. That's kind of the, really, not to over-dramatize, it's kind of the turning point of the game right there in London, didn't you think?
Oh, no question. Yeah,
Jack came out playing pretty well.
Until then, if you think back on that season, there had been a little stretch of games where they had played well. There was Miami. They had had a chance against Cincinnati late with the comeback.
Yeah.
They had Cleveland. And they were playing okay early against Dallas. They had,
were they up 7-0 at the time?
Denard had had a run, but it felt okay.
I want to say it was 7-0, and they got to stop forcing Dallas to punt there, right? And they're going to take the ball with the lead. Was it 3-0?
7-3.
7-3. Okay. Yeah. I think they're in the lead early, though, right?
And then, I mean, it's not to say the wheels wouldn't have come
off sure.
anyway. But yeah, but
that was a gut punch. I remember that was a devastating one, because here you are, you know, you're wanting to, you've got all the pomp and circumstance of this game in London, and you haven't won many games, and you get off to a really good start against one of the best teams you're going to play all year, and you know, just the Jags don't have that kind of margin for error. Certainly didn't last year.
Not last year to
give that away.
Yeah, and unfortunately for Ace, who I like a lot, was always very professional in his dealings. When I talked to him, It was too little of the first play we heard touchdowns, and too many, not too many fumbles, but just not enough production on punt returns, and really after the suspension last year, never really got into the rotation offensively as a slot receiver, and didn't seem like he was going to this year.
Right. It didn't seem that way, but the timing of it certainly is curious.
Sure.
Just because, you know, roster shifts happen all the time in the offseason, all around the National Football League. But typically, there's a one-for-one reciprocal move. If you let a guy go, you've got your mind on bringing in somebody else to add to the 90-man roster. And here you've got a circumstance where Jags haven't been on the field. Typically, you might see a cut or two right at the end of OTAs. You say, all right, we've gotten a good look at this guy.
Right.
We decided he's not going to help us out. Let's see if we can sign another corner or whatever the case may be. So with that happening, kind of falling right in the the middle of the end of OTAs and the beginning of training camp. I think, you know, certainly, look, there are going to be people out there speculating because Ace Sanders has had a four-game suspension for substance abuse policy violation that did something happen. I don't have any knowledge of that. I don't think anybody in this room has any knowledge of anything happening.
I have heard nothing to indicate that it has. I understand people speculating because of that. As of right now, it appears that it was just a case where he was not going to make the team. And I haven't talked to Gus or Dave, but it may have been a case where you say, we're 2 weeks out of training camp. Let's give him a chance to find a roster where maybe he has a chance. That could be it. I don't know.
Right now, candidates to return punts, certainly Tanner Doss, you would think, tops the list right now.
And he's intriguing because, you know, he's a guy that I think not a lot of Jaguars fans have much knowledge of beyond that he led the NFL in punt returns with the Ravens in 2013. And that would lead you to believe that he has a real chance at that job. And I always go back to right before he had the injury, the ankle last year in training camp, there was a little glimmer, a day and a half in practice, where when you threw him the ball, he was open, made some catches, looked like a guy, I don't want to say you could rely on or was going to be in the rotation, but that you noticed a little bit in practice. And then he was hurt and he was gone, so it was sort of a blip on the radar. But he may have a chance to show enough to be a part of this thing, or Rashad Greene may take it over in a training camp and make those two things his role. We'll see.
Those seem to be the primary guys now that at least would top the list going in at the top, you know, top of mind.
Well, Kandon Doss was not a guy who was overlooked as a signing this time last year, meaning he was in the mix. We didn't talk about him a whole lot, but he was a guy that they had signed for a reason.
Sure.
And he was on IR, so it's easy for fans not to ask. It's easy for us not to discuss. But he's a very interesting story heading into training camp because he may be a guy who, if he was with the Ravens still and they knew about him, fans would be talking about, oh, we're getting Tanner Doss back. Well, this team isn't really talking about him as getting him back. They never really had him. But he may be a guy who has a chance to contribute and is a solid veteran. Might be more of a factor than we're talking about in the last couple of months is my point.
I go back about 3 years. I remember reading a blurb on Tanner Doss, and it's stuck in my mind ever since that someone reporting on Baltimore said that the Ravens' long-term plan was to develop him basically to be the guy when Anquan Boldin came to the end of that contract that he was on and he would leave, that he would be able to basically take his spot and step into his place in the starting lineup. Obviously, it didn't work out for him to that degree, but that shows you that he has some ability, and they thought they saw something in him. He's relatively young. I don't think Tanner Doss would make a huge impact on this receiving core, just based on the fact that you've got a lot of young guys that the coaching staff obviously likes, that they're invested in. But we know this, any fifth receiver is going to have to play special teams significantly, and that would certainly cover it if he were that guy.
But if you're thinking about wanting a guy who can be your fifth guy, which in the NFL, fifth guys often become third guys with injuries, and he has perhaps more physical tools to play wide receiver than Ace does, or if they like him better there, if they feel more solid about him, then maybe they envision that being a little more solid if he has to come in and be the third guy for a couple of weeks than they felt about Ace.
What do you hear, if anything, during OTAs and minicamps about Rashad Greene? You get any feedback on how he looks special teams-wise?
I got a lot of questions about him and didn't really hear a whole lot either way, which isn't that unusual for a rookie who's sort of trying to get his feet under him. My impression was he was a guy who was very much trying to get his feet under him and that's what that OTA period is about for rookies sometimes. You get 4 weeks. You want to learn the offense. I didn't get the feeling he stood out. I didn't get the feeling that there was any concern. It was just, okay, this is what he's doing right now. Let's see what happens when training camp comes. And that's more common for rookies than it is for them to stand out.
Right, just to kind of that they're just trying to acclimate. We would have heard, if there was something big jumping off the page in regard to Rashad
Greene.
I didn't
get the idea that this Ace Sanders release was, oh my goodness, Rashad Greene was so good in OTAs. We have to, I mean, it didn't feel like that, but it's not that Rashad Greene wasn't playing well. It's just he's a rookie and he's a fifth round rookie. So it would not be unusual for him to need time to develop on this team in the last couple of years because of the lack of veterans ready to play. We've often got very excited about a fifth and sixth round guys. Oh, they're going to play. You don't really want those guys on the field right away, ideally. They would like to be in a situation where they can let Rashad Greene develop, let James Sam, you know, these middle round picks. It's okay for them to not stand out in OTAs and training camp and have time to develop and move into the lineup organically or on their own time.
Corey Grant got some buzz about making the roster, I think primarily because of the kick returning ability. Any looks for him at punt returner that you remember seeing in OTAs?
I don't want to say he wasn't back there catching punts during...
At any point,
yeah,
right.
Because they roll a lot of guys through there. It's a very different skill set, and on paper, it's usually not your speed burner. It takes more than speed, is my point. You can be a fast guy and be a good returner.
Making that first guy miss is...
Yeah, Deion Sanders was very fast and a very good punt returner, but he also had quick... He could make a guy miss. You'd rather have, you know, 10 or 15 yard speed as punt return and make the first guy miss, whereas with kickoff returns, that's why Denard Robinson on kickoff returns makes a lot of sense, not so much on punt return. And Corey Grant feels like that same guy who is willing to just go all out and be burning at the very start of a return, but maybe not a quick twitch guy who is making guys miss within a 5 or 6 yard period or 5 or 6 yard stretch.
I'm going to give you a quick British Open scoreboard update here. Was a five-way tie for the lead at 13 under par until Zach Johnson just dropped his fifth birdie of the opening nine holes. Shot 31 going out. Now he's at 14 under all by himself. One shot clear of, man, what a leaderboard. Adam Scott, Louis Oosthuizen, both at 13 under. Padraig Harrington, three-time major champion at 13 under. Mark Leishman at 13 under par. A big group at 12 under. Five guys at 12 under, including Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, and Sergio Garcia. And looked like Jordan Spieth. I think he's playing the fifth hole, the par five fifth, right?
Yeah, he's got an eagle look.
Yeah, 220 going in. I know he was saying, get down, get down. He landed it on the front of the green, and it rolled all the way back about pin high, but probably a good 35 footer or something like that off to the side, but about pin high. So certainly you'd expect him to make birdie there, if not drop a bomb for an eagle. But birdie then would put him at 13 under, a shot off the pace right now. See, Zach Johnson, if he can go out and get in the clubhouse, if the weather starts to get a little bit more inclement, a little rainy and windy there already over at St. Andrews, we'll see what kind of finish we're going to have right now. But a lot of guys with major championship pedigree or with a lot of contending rounds in major championships on the board with guys like Jason Day and Sergio Garcia, neither of which have broken through to win that first major. We'll see if anybody's able to get that done today at the Open Championship. Somebody's going to win the British Open, whether or not it's a multiple-time major winner or not. That'll be determined later on this afternoon. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is the way to do it. With John Osier, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we march along on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. Zach Johnson, one-shot lead on, what now, six guys at 13 under?
Yep.
That's what it looks like. Speed, Scott, Oosthuizen, Day, Leishman, and Harrington.
For now.
I mean, Leishman is a very good player, and he's the bum of the group, right? I mean, that's a pretty good group right there.
It really is.
When Mark Leishman is the worst guy in your top seven, and Sergio lurking just a couple of shots back as well. So plenty of firepower on the leaderboard at the British Open. In fact, Jordan Spieth was able to convert that eagle opportunity into an easy birdie, and Louis Oosthuizen, now playing that same hole, looked to be about pin high on the other side of the green. And he'll have an eagle opportunity as well, trailing Zach Johnson by one shot. 6-4-1-10-10. We'll get into Peter King's top 10 camp stories for training camps coming up, and I'll get your opinions from you guys on how they register with you on a scale of 1 to 10. In the meantime, let's go to the phones and welcome in Dean to lead things off on Jaguars today. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning. I just wanted to this is basically just to compare where the Jags are as far as their transition here in year two of Bortles, year three of Bradley and Mr. Caldwell. But I was watching last night, and these stories have run, both the Favre story and the Lombardi story, and, you know, where they were. And it took 3 years for Vince Lombardi back in the 60s before we were in the Enlighten era. Where we're at today in society, and he transitioned in 3 years from a team that won one game playing for the championship of the NFL, and obviously that's what we're trying to compete for here in Jacksonville, is the Lombardi Trophy. And then how far, you know, brought the Packers around in a short period of time. I mean, where do you think in today's enlightened society, I mean, you know, Ace Sanders can't stay at the crack pipe, well, goodbye, you know, but where do you think we are as far as Blake Bortles and the rest of the team transitioning to a championship team?
All right, thank you, Dean. I'm glad you know what Ace Sanders' personal issues are when nobody else seems to. I don't know what today's enlightened society has to do with, you know, Brett Favre, quick turnaround. I heard Jeff and Dan discuss this morning. After, 25 years of Green Bay being horrific? I mean, they were terrible from the end of the Lombardi era. So did Brett Favre turn them around relatively quickly? Well, Brett Favre's a Hall of Fame quarterback, arguably certainly one of the top 10 statistically of all time, top five in his career totals. And I don't know what the point is to compare the Lombardi era Packers. I mean, the NFL is completely different. Bottom line is Gus Bradley, Dave Caldwell need to win games this year. But if the standard is, well, Lombardi led him from whatever he led him to 3 years to the NFL championship, that's why the trophy's named after him, right? I mean, one of the reasons he was one of the best, most successful coaches of all time. So if the standard is, are you living up to Vince Lombardi, you're probably going to be disappointed by everyone that ever coaches the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I mean, they started from a point a couple of years ago where they were at a very low point. And I think there is a very legitimate reason right now to believe they're significantly beyond that point and that they have a core that can show significant improvement with the record on the field from the last couple of years this year. So how's it going to play out? I don't think any of us know, but I certainly think the pieces are in place where it could be a very interesting year this year as you watch guys develop. I don't know that all 15 guys that we're looking at and saying, will they make a jump? I don't know that every one of them will make a jump. But I think there is a good possibility that a lot of these young guys we talk about, you know, Telvin Smith and, you know, Aaron Colvin and Brandon Linder and all these guys we're talking about, I think by the end of this year, we might be looking at each other saying, those guys can be really good players. We like where they are. And the Jaguars were a lot better in 2015. There's a good chance of that. I didn't feel like there was a good chance of that the last couple of years.
I'll say this, and I can't speak for Dean specifically, but this is the impression I get because we get calls like this periodically from time to time. And I do think there's a segment out there that is, I don't know if they're just conditioned because there have been so many bad years of Jaguar football, or they're negative people by inclination, or they just really believe that Gus Bradley's not the right guy for the job, or whatever the case. But you almost feel like in that call, I hear a guy who's setting himself up for a self-fulfilling prophecy. The Jags are not going to be any good. I'm telling you, you know, that he's already written off this everything. And that's your prerogative.
Sure.
If you want to be that way. But again, if you're setting up a standard that Vince Lombardi went in 3 years and took the Packers to the championship 40, 50 years ago, what bearing that has on anything in today's, quote, enlightened age or whatever the heck he's talking about? I don't know what the hell he's talking about, quite frankly. So I think
I was a little lost on that one, but I'm lost a lot. So it's not unusual.
By the way, I'm looking at Packers history right now. They won the Super Bowl in 67. They had two playoff appearances between 1968, that next season, and 1993. They went to the playoffs twice in that span of time.
But a quick turnaround.
They didn't.
71 and 82.
Right. They didn't win a playoff game until 1993 when Brett Favre was there. That was his second year there in Green Bay. And since 1993, the Green Bay Packers have missed the playoffs five times. They've been a great franchise since that time.
Because they had two Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
Aaron Rodgers,
and that's what they've had back-to-back. And so, you know, if that's, again, if that's a standard, is Blake Bortles going to play up to the level of a young Brett Favre who went on to win three MVPs in the 1990s, win a Super Bowl? Chances are no. Chances are no one in the NFL who is not already at that or considered on that path, you know, outside of the guys that are well-established like Brady and Manning and Brees and Rodgers. How many guys are going to match Brett Favre and his accomplishments in their career? Not very many.
Yeah. Again, it's tough to compare to that because I think a fan of every team understandably sees an elite team and wants to get there, and those should be the expectations. But most franchises have a few times in their history where they can approach that. Right now, what the Jaguars are trying to do is get their core to a point where they are competitive and they are back to where they have a chance to win games most Sundays. And at that point, then you take the next step. So I think there are a lot of signs that the direction is absolutely the where they want to go. I just don't know how you make the comparison right now between what they've done and the absolute best franchises of all time. Those are rare lightning in a bottle type things sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. And look, it's your prerogative if you want to say, hey, I just don't think they're going to be able to get it done. We've heard too often they're getting better. That's your prerogative. You can feel that way. It's just, to me,
I'm not saying you're not working toward that, but I don't know how you answer that question.
I guess I just look at it like I think some people have the mindset that same old story. They've already written off the season. If you want to, go ahead and write off the season. Then I don't – what's the point in that? You know, you don't know what the season's going to hold at this point in time.
When you made the choice to build the way that they wanted to build, which is through the draft and with developmental guys and with the idea that Blake Bortles was going to play last year before he was ready, then I think by definition this year, you were going to enter this year with – a lot of unanswered questions, because that's what developing is. When you're developing, you're going to see things on the field that make you think, well, that guy's not ready yet. Well, yeah, they're not ready yet because they're young players and they're developing. We're seeing it on the fly. So this year, I think, is a year where a lot of those questions that haven't been answerable should be getting answered.
No sooner, by the way, had Adam Scott tied for the lead at 14 under a moment ago at the British Open with his fifth birdie in the opening nine holes. Zach Johnson just added his sixth birdie in 10 holes now to go to 15 under par. Now one shot clear of Adam Scott and two clear of the rest of the field. And that group at 13 under continues to include Jordan Spieth, Louis Oosthuizen, Jason Day, Sergio Garcia, and Mark Leishman. So a crowded leaderboard, a pretty impressive leaderboard as it stands right now. But Zach Johnson, 6 under through 10, putting together the round of the day so far, and what could turn out to be the round of the tournament if he's able to post the number and hang on. He's got 8 holes to play. We'll keep you posted on that. All right, let me take a look here, guys, in the Monday Morning Quarterback column for Peter King. He listed what he feels are the 10 best training camp stories to come. And so we'll take a look at a few of them here while we have a few minutes. And you guys give me, from a personal standpoint, 0 to 10, your own personal interest in these training camp stories, according to Peter King. Number one, starting with the fate of Tom Brady, we all understand. That will come out preliminarily. We'll get some kind of ruling from Roger Goodell, we expect, this week. And then where that goes beyond that. The entire Brady saga, what's your level, 0 to 10?
Well, I'm a little tired of it by this point, but being somebody who's following the Jaguars and trying to figure out if he's going to play in that Week 3 game, then the interest is, you know, 9 or 10. I mean, that's an interesting story for us. If it wasn't for that, you know, it would be interesting. I'd read it. It wouldn't matter that much.
No, it's a 10. It's a 10. And it's not just because it affects the Jaguars maybe directly with whether or not they're going to play Tom Brady. Again, we go back to, this is a story where the league is accusing a 4-time champion of being a cheater. And how does that play out? I think it's a huge, huge story, and it's why it's been as big as it has been for the last several months. But yeah, that's a 10. That's a huge one.
Well, I think
I feel like they've already called him a cheater.
Yeah.
So, they, you know, that's the, I'll read it.
Yeah. No, I'd probably put it at a 9 because for the same reason you mentioned fatigue. I'm just, we're all a little tired of the story at this point in time, but it is an important story both for us locally and obviously in the big picture. Lou Oosthuizen had an eagle opportunity, three-putted it for par on number five.
So and to your point, Mike, when the Brady thing first happened, for a month I read every wart.
Of course.
So I think it's just feels like it's played out.
Right, and now I will continue to read every word, but just kind of a little of, all right, let's get to the end of this, you know, kind of feeling about it. All right, number two story for Peter King, the reincarnation of Sam Bradford. All right, the torn ACL each of the last two seasons. He is Chip Kelly's designated guy, at least we believe, in Philadelphia. Where does this story register with you?
Being it's not in the Jaguars conference, I mean, it's certainly intriguing because a guy who's come back off that injury and has all kinds of talent, it's interesting. I guess I sort of have given up a little bit on Sam Bradford after hearing about it for a long, long time. I think if he starts to get good and starts to play well, it'll be very, very interesting.
Tony, what do you got?
Probably 7 or 8 with Bradford.
That high?
Yeah. I mean, I've obviously been a fan of the NFCs for a long time, and I think it really is interesting to see where the story it's the story of the Eagles, really, right?
I agree. The Eagles story is really interesting.
Right. I saw somewhere a couple weeks ago where they said the Eagles have been the healthiest team in football the last 2 years.
Right.
Now, and is that going to continue? They're bringing in a guy like Sam Bradford. He's been a walking injury since he came into the league. I think he fits what Chip Kelly wants to do on that offense really, really well if he can get on the football field. I mean, if Mark Sanchez looks like a capable quarterback in that offense, Sam Bradford is a more skilled player than Mark Sanchez. Now, can he get on that field and play consistently for him? I don't know, but it feels like there's an opportunity for Philadelphia there in the NFC East, and I think a lot of it does depend on whether Sam Bradford can be that guy. With everything they shipped out of town, that offense is keyed by that quarterback, and I'm curious to see how it's going to look for them.
Now, Peter's premise here is it's training camp stories, right?
Training camp stories, right.
For the season, to me, the Eagles are fascinating in that Chip Kelly is a guy who's sort of doing things his own way, going against the grain. And I think you'll find out this season if that has worked. In that sense, I think they may be, from an objective point of view, from a league point of view, one of the two or three most interesting stories.
Yeah.
But for training camp, it's hard to know that.
I think the Chip Kelly story is fascinating.
Yeah.
I really do. And that you were right, Tony. They're the healthiest team over the last couple of years, and a lot of it they attributed to his outside-the-box thinking. You know, every player on that team has a protein shake made specifically for them. They have nutritionists that work with their diets and everything, and every, you know, little things like that. And, you know, some of the grizzled coaches kind of laugh at that, but the results have been pretty good for Philadelphia. I don't think it's just directly, I'm not saying shakes are the reason. You know what I mean? That's one example of many
it was funny listening
outside
to you,
the box
like,
ways of thinking.
I have a shake stay out.
That's more just indicative of the fact that he's willing to think a little bit differently.
So milkshakes don't work for that. It's protein.
It's protein shakes.
All right, well,
yes. Protein.
Yes.
I'll just switch up.
Boy, we have got a birdie fest going on right now. Spieth and Day both birdie the par 4 sixth hole to get to 14 under par. Now a three-way tie for the lead. One shot behind Zach Johnson, who's going for birdie from the fringe on number 11. Just assume Zach Johnson's going for birdie every time he's got the putter in his hand at this stage, although he comes up about 4 or 5 feet short on that one. A little bit of a tester for par that could drop him back into a tie. Here's one. I'll give you my vote. This one registers with me at about a 1 on the scale. The Jim Tomsula era begins.
Oh, who cares?
In San Francisco. And any more time we need to spend on that one?
No.
All right, good. I mean, look, for me, who is so into fantasy football, every coaching change is fascinating to me and the way it's going to play out. But honestly, Jim Tomsula doesn't move the dial.
He looks like
a
crazy person.
He does.
I mean, from that perspective, maybe it's not a 1. Maybe it's like a 3.
You know? It's still kind of a 1 to me.
And that's been a team that's been really good in that division, and it creates kind of a black hole for somebody else to step into. But
they're sliding. The perception is they're sliding. The St. Louis Rams are the team that's in
position. Can Arizona do what they did again last year?
Right, but they already did it to some degree last year. What happened there, Fortunato? Somebody hold out from... It doesn't look like any one of the leaders.
The drop zone, it looks
like.
Yeah,
somebody, Matt Jones,
He's playing golf.
Good for him. Taking time off from whatever he's doing radio up in Arkansas to get out there.
The blizzard.
Now he's got Australian citizenship as well, so good for him. This is a good way to finish, though. That was 18. You finish with an eagle or I guess maybe a birdie from the drop zone. He probably hit it OB.
Yeah, it's not bad.
On that hole, and it looked like he finished there with a hole in birdie. All right, one more before we break here. Winston and Mariota careen towards a week one showdown.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. A slew of birthdays of significance on this date in football history. A lot of them were local college ties. One, 1945, happy 70th to Jake Scott, five-time Pro Bowler, two-time first-team All-Pro out of the University of Georgia, primarily playing his professional career with the Miami Dolphins. Born on this date in 1947, former general manager of your Jacksonville Jaguars, the first African-American quarterback to open a season as a starter, Shaq Harris, born on this date in football history in Monroe, Louisiana, broken with the Buffalo Bills. And so he was the first guy, wasn't the first quarterback, and I can't remember the guy's name. I looked it up earlier, and I'll come up with the name. The guy, the first black quarterback, actually, in the National Football League, ended up getting converted to receiver, was one of Shaq's receivers in that first game that he played for the Buffalo Bills.
Marlon Briscoe.
Was it Briscoe? Okay, there you go. And which just goes to show you, John, how many guys do you see that actually get snapped as quarterback in the NFL and then get their position changed? We've come a long way in that regard. I mean, understanding of the acceptance that African-Americans and anybody can play quarterback. The color of your skin has nothing to do with your ability to play quarterback. But the opportunities now are... I'm not saying that there's nothing that holds anybody back in the game of football anymore, but it seems like pretty much winning is what's embraced. If you can help me win, I'm going to embrace you in the NFL.
It's significantly different, and it's different for head coaches and quarterbacks. When I first started covering the league in 95, I was asked by the TU to write that story a lot, and there were times where that was a story. I don't get the idea that reporters are asked to write that story that much anymore.
Right.
Because it's not I think that's a good thing for the most, that it's not a topic as much in terms of, I don't say the problem has been solved, but it certainly feels like it's not as much of an issue as it was 20 years ago. And I say that as a good thing.
Absolutely. We're far removed from the days when the reporter asked Doug Williams leading up to the Super Bowl, how long have you been a black quarterback? If you remember that back in the 1980s. Also born in the state, former Florida State Seminole Shannon Baker, former Alabama quarterback Jay Barker, former Miami linebacker DJ Williams, and happy birthday to the Jaguars' own new right tackle, born in 1986, Jeremy Parnell, 29 years young today. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now drive around the NFL.
Yeah, and while we're talking about birthdays, since it was over the course of the weekend, not only my own on Saturday, but
Shai Khan and Jeff Lagerman.
And Lagerman, yeah. All on Saturday, the 18th. So happy birthday to all of us.
Happy birthday to you, Tony.
One of the reportedly
right past my head, Johnny,
deflated footballs that the New England Patriots used during the first half of the Pats' romp over the Colts in the AFC Championship game was sold at auction yesterday for nearly $44,000. The ball was one of the three touchdowns that LeGarrette Blount scored in the game. It wound up in the hands of a fan named Lauren Nichols, who then through a company has sold that ball at auction for $44,000. According to the San Diego Union-Tribune, Philip Rivers and the Chargers contract extension talks have not picked up in the last couple months since the draft. When his name was swirling amid trade rumors, Rivers has indicated that he wouldn't want to play football in Los Angeles if the Chargers were to move there. Of course, San Diego, one of the teams that is still reportedly considering that move to the Los Angeles area. So we'll see how that story plays out probably over the course of this season going into the next offseason in regards to Phillip Rivers and his future in San Diego.
I had an interesting text a moment ago on the Boss's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line along the lines of what we were talking about with the Philadelphia Eagles staying healthy. And I didn't know where this was going initially. And the texter says, remember how we talked about how the NFL doesn't necessarily want to promote more two-point conversions because it's one more full-speed play that can cause injury, right? And there's that debate, or will they move it closer with the corresponding extra point attempts being moved farther back to really promote more? And they didn't adjust the two-point conversion line. And the texter goes on to say, well, who runs more plays than the Eagles? And they were the healthiest team the past 2 years. Kind of interesting. You know what? That is kind of interesting, right? They, when you talk about all these studies on, you know, length of game, and clearly the more times you're out there, the more you're risking injury. But maybe if you do things, if you find ways to prepare your players to make them healthier, they can withstand that better. And or maybe it's dumb luck too, because we only have a 2 year sample size on Chip Kelly's Eagles. They could have a rash of injuries unrelated to any kind of training methods whatsoever. Somebody puts their shoulder pad into the side of your knee, doesn't matter if you're eating your smoothie or not, probably.
Yeah, and I would wait until the end of this year, next year, to see if the statistical trends hold true. So we'll see.
This one in on, and I think we probably, no news is no news in this case. Another texter on the text line, Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, said, what's the latest on Justin Blackmon? There's no latest as far as I know, right? Or is there?
No, not that, not beyond, as far as we know, he hasn't reapplied, anything.
No change in his status whatsoever. And as has been the case all along, the Jags will plan to proceed without him, as they've always made plans to proceed without him. And if at any point in the future, he does return, it's got to be looked at as a surprising bonus at this point.
Right, and that's been the approach all along. And Shad Khan, I think it was last training camp, made this pretty clear that they would welcome him back. Dave Caldwell saying the same thing, but they can't plan anything around that. So that's where they stand.
Jordan Spieth just hit his approach shot on number 8. I guess his tee shot on 8. It's a par 3. Tony.
It's about a mile
away. The phrase
on that
lot
green.
Of green
yeah.
comes to mind.
Like the camera kept panning back and back and
like
back.
We're going to see the flag eventually,
is
right?
Is he on the green?
He's on the green. Now, keep in mind, a lot of these are double greens. I don't know if 9 is or 8 is a double green there.
I think it is.
I don't know which ones are. And those are usually massive. You ever play many courses with double greens? We played,
a handful. Yeah.
I think we did. When the new course down in Orlando, when we played down there, that was one of the double green ones. You got to be careful. You're aiming for the right stick, man. Zach Johnson just carded another birdie on number 12, by the way.
Seven under today.
16 under for the tournament. 7 under through 12 holes today.
Goodness.
Major championship scoring record is 63, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
And so, you know, par 72. He's got a chance at it right now. Leishman had a chance at it over the weekend to shoot 62 if he got a couple of late
birdies. And Adam
birdies
Scott's right there, too. I mean, Adam Scott's 6 under through 11 today. He's playing the 12th right now. So both those guys are just putting up a crazy number.
I honestly don't know where the advantage lies here because you've got the guys who are trailing them, like Oosthuizen and Spieth, who've only played about 7 holes. So they have more holes to play. Birdies are plentiful out there, but the weather is not great. I don't know if it's going to get any, you know, the rain's going to come down any harder than it is right now. You can't really see it when you see it from the wide shots on TV, but when you see it up close, it was coming down, you know, not super heavy, but enough that they've got to get the umbrellas out between shots as they're walking down the fairway. At least they choose to. All right, ding in our next caller, if you would, Tyler. That means Terrence is on the line. Good morning, Terrence. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Hey guys, Mike, hey Mike, I wanted to keep that name, the voice of the reason that you gave me. You know what? Can
well,
I keep
then,
that?
Then you need to be more reasonable than you were the last couple times you called, Terrence.
Mike, you know I'm always reasonable. But Mike, I wanted to ask you,
okay.
I wanted to ask y'all, y'all didn't call out Blake, for playing in the tournament this weekend. Is he a right-handed golfer?
I assume so.
No, he's a lefty, actually.
Is he a lefty?
Yeah.
Is he okay? I don't think I've ever seen him hit a ball. Why should we have called out Blake for playing in that?
Okay, that's why I asked first, because I was trying to figure out if he was right-handed. I'm thinking he shouldn't be playing, to save his right hand, his right arm.
You use both arms when you play golf, Terrence. I don't understand which arm is more likely to get hurt.
Well, that solves it. Then he shouldn't be playing. Maybe it should be in his contract. He shouldn't play golf. He should have been,
why
working on his technique. So you think
should he go to the movies? Is he allowed to go to the movies?
Might.
I'm at parents. Don't answer with my name. Answer the freaking question, all right?
Only
seriously.
If somebody else holds the popcorn.
You're doing this
and puts
for
it
five
in his mouth
years.
For him. Or if he's going to grab the popcorn, it's got to be left-handed.
Right. Hey, everything should be done with his left.
Terrence, goodbye. Ding him out. Ding him out. Enough. Good voice of nothing.
I was not serious, Terrence.
I know.
So he's not allowed to play golf.
Come on, Terrence. He wants to be the voice of reason.
Right.
He's not allowed to play golf.
Can't really play pickup basketball, but if he just wants to shoot around for a couple minutes, make sure it's left-handed.
Right.
I know he may not be a left-handed basketball player, but don't shoot
with the right
hand. I
wonder if Terrence ever played golf. Tony, your shoulder is messed up right now, right?
Yeah.
Probably in part from swinging a golf club. Maybe
could
not.
Be.
I don't know, but it's your left shoulder. Look, I have tendonitis in my left elbow. I'm a right-hander. So Blake's playing left-handed. That must mean his right arm is susceptible to the tendonitis.
I have no idea.
How dare he play golf? You've never heard me complain about any of these guys playing golf in the offseason.
No.
Kidding me? Stop it.
By the way, guys, Blake was practicing his technique out there. He was with Jordan Palmer throwing every day, he said, according to Sam Kavars.
Well, there you go.
That's why his golf game stinks.
Look, exactly. Maybe if he had paid a little attention to the detail there, he wouldn't have finished 89th.
That's why he's finishing with Charles Barkley.
Stop it.
This is obviously that's a silly premise. Blake has done, and obviously is continuing to do, as much as you possibly can between year one and year two. And you can't do it every day. You can't do it 24/7. You have to pace yourself. He's doing it professionally. He's doing it the right way.
Ocho Fisho texts, can't believe Terrence gets so much airtime. This guy's act is tired. What airtime? People call the program. We put him on the air. It's not like Terrence is our guest on the show. And when he said something ridiculous, we got rid of him. That's what he got. So there you have it. All right. 641-1010. We'll get back to some of Peter King's
once you go into
top
this break,
camp stories.
Left-handed, Tyler.
Stop it.
Left-handed click of the button.
I don't want you spraining your wrist back there,
got
to
get ready for the season.
You better be studying your technique on the during the talk segments here, so you do a tighter break. Zach Johnson,
is Terrence
Adam
a real
Scott.
Person, or have you just said
no,
that?
No, Terrence
up?
Is real. I've met Terrence. Zach Johnson, 16 under. Adam Scott, 15. Spieth, Day, and Oosthuizen at 14 under par right now at the British Open. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today on Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Ouch. Jordan Spieth just fired that ball into the crowd. You see that? I hope he did that with the proper hand, though. He might have hurt himself. He did flip that thing left-handed in the crowd pretty good. Jordan Spieth, truly, Tony, I'm estimating over a 100-foot putt on number 8, right? It was a monster of a putt. Must have putted it 30 feet past the hole.
Yep, off the green.
Off the green, onto the fringe, and hit the comebacker, the potential par saver, a good 4 or 5 feet past the hole, missed that for double bogey.
So now he's 3 back after Zach Johnson bogeyed 13.
Yeah, he is ticked, and understandably so, but that is that's a good chance. That's a tournament-losing hole right there for Jordan Spieth, the
could
way the
be.
Rest of the field just continues to go forward, dropping big numbers. We'll see. Sergio just dropped a birdie on 10 to get to 14 under. So Spieth has his work cut out for him now, 12 under par, 3 shots off the lead of Zach Johnson and Adam Scott at the top of the leaderboard at the Open Championship over there.
The Aussies are invading.
These guys, what I don't want to see is Jordan Spieth throwing that football around in between tournaments.
Especially not right-handed.
No, sir. That could mess you up. Let's see. Texter on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. I understand kind of what Terrence is talking about,
Stop.
Still dumb, but I understand, he continues. Blake's shoulder suffered from fatigue, stated by Blake himself, so maybe he should be resting it as much as possible, but I still think the guy should be able to play golf. So which is it? You think he should play golf or should be resting it as much as possible? I think he's saying, I understand at least where Terrence got the idea, even though it may be a little extreme.
I understand it too. At some point, these guys are allowed to live lives. I get, not being allowed to bungee jump. You know, not being allowed to jump out of planes.
And by the way, if that story had been true about Marcus Mariota not being allowed to surf, which apparently was not, after this weekend, did you see the video of the guy in South Africa?
That was incredible.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That guy made it out of there, and he's in the boat, and he's like, I feel pretty good right now, to be honest with you. walk away from that.
Right. They had the interview with the guy that he was out there surfing against. It was the finals of that competition.
Right.
And the other guy that was out there surfing said, you know, I look over and all of a sudden you see the shark come on the guy and he's fighting it off. And then he's like, the other guy's crying. He's like, then he went under. And he thought he was gone.
Yeah.
Like gone forever. And it was a really emotional couple interviews from those guys. They decided they weren't going to surf anymore that day. And they split the prize money between the two of them.
Probably a good move.
It's probably a good move. But, fought off a shark. If you haven't seen the video, it's pretty incredible stuff.
Because I know there's some people at the station who are terrified of the water. And if you've listened to the station, you know who they are.
Right.
I think it's frankly hilarious because the odds of you actually getting attacked by a shark are so incredibly low. However, if you're the guy who got attacked by the shark immediately after seeing somebody else get attacked by the shark, well, that one's on you.
Yeah.
Okay? If you don't clear the area after this shark has maybe a scent for
it's shown that it's willing to attack a person in the last 10 minutes.
Right.
It's time to get out of the water.
On a surfboard, you're going to look just like that guy.
You're surfing in Great White Country anyway if you're going to be over there in Australia. So.
Was he in Australia? See, I thought I saw an Australian. I think it was in South Africa was the tournament. At least that's what I heard
the guys this morning
saying. But I did see an interview with him on an Australian TV station in the boat with the guy.
Yeah, South Africa.
They were giddy.
Ooh. It's prime country.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that shark land?
That's where, like, if you've seen any of the Shark Week stuff where they showed the video of the great whites breaching to come after the seals, coming completely out of the water, that's South Africa.
Ah.
That's where they film most of that stuff because they got that seal island or whatever it is down there.
Well, it's a good story for that guy to tell. Anyway.
It's a pretty incredible story. Didn't have a scratch on him.
No.
Unbelievable.
No, he got tangled up in his cord a little bit. He said he got one punch in on the shark's back. And apparently, I was listening to Jeff and Dan on the drill this morning. They were saying MythBusters really did show that if you punch a shark in the nose, that's probably about the most effective way to deal
with
an attack, right?
Yeah.
That they will tend to leave you alone. So he was just wailing, man, that guy, and happy to be in one piece. All right, let's get back to Peter King's top training camp stories and see where these register with you guys. Moving on. From one of the ones we already talked about. We already talked about the fate of Tom Brady, Sam Bradford's reincarnation and what that means not only for him, but in a greater sense to the Chip Kelly experiment in Philadelphia. Jim Tomsula taking over in San Francisco. The rookie starters, Winston and Mariota, expected to meet up in week one. Number five, does this register with you on a scale of 1 to 10? The broken record, that is Andy Dalton. Excellent in the regular season, or at least certainly a consistent winner. Not only 0-4 in the postseason, but losing by an average margin of 15 points a game.
You know, I don't know that it's a training camp story, really. I mean, I think it'll register if they're in the playoffs.
Right, this is one that's going to play out over the course of the season.
So, I always go back to, you know, there's a lot worse quarterbacks to have on your team than Andy Dalton, but, you know, it won't really be a story until January in the playoffs.
And we've talked about this a bunch of times in relation to the Atlanta Falcons, you know, and not consecutive winning seasons in their entire history until Mike Smith gets there. You think, wow, Mike Smith has four straight winning years. He can stay there as long as he likes. But even then, you know, once you reach a certain level consistently, that bar ultimately has to get raised higher and higher and higher until, you know, you either win the championship or you don't, with the extreme being, you know, Tony Dungy had some very good teams in Tampa, just couldn't get over the hump. And they get rid of him. It wasn't like he was a bad coach. He was right there on the brink.
Yep.
And they bring in John Gruden, and that was enough for the mix to push him over the top. Obviously, it worked out for Dungy and Indy.
Sure. But, yeah, that's more of a January storyline. And are they going to be playing in January this year? With, I would think that Baltimore is probably going to wind up being the favorite in the North for most people would be my guess. Pittsburgh is going to be good again this year. Is this the year that finally Cincinnati doesn't make the playoffs under Andy Dalton? And just how much fire does he come under then if it's not even a playoff berth that you're talking about in Cincinnati? I think you could see it turn quick like you did in Atlanta and the last couple examples you were talking about.
All being said, I would say this is just slightly more interesting than Jim Tom Sula to me, if that. So pretty low on the scale.
For training camp, sure.
Yeah.
I'm interested in Andy Dalton and how it's going to play out for him and what it looks like if he ever does win a playoff game and maybe relaxes a little bit when it comes to the playoffs, kind of like Tony Romo, who I thought was a good play. I think Romo's better than Andy Dalton is or will be, but I'm curious about Andy Dalton and where he goes in his career from here because of how much pressure there is on him to finally get over that playoff hump.
Next one on the list for Peter King, the Saints changing on the fly with all, you know, Jimmy Graham is gone. Kenny Stills, they deal off to Miami. They bring in C.J. Spiller. They rebuild their linebacking core. To me, this is just the story of the NFL all season. Teams change, personnel yeah. change. Now, Jimmy Graham's a pretty big name to have change. What I think a lot of people overlook in that deal, the Saints for years paid more to their interior linemen than almost any team in the league because Drew Brees was most effective when you could keep that immediate pressure out of his face, and he had the ability to step up in the pocket like a lot of great quarterbacks do. And in that deal, they bring in Max Unger from Seattle, who's going to be a major upgrade at center for them. So, you know, put him in there next to Jari Evans, and I think they're trying to go back to that formula. They probably want to run it a little bit more, but they still feel Drew Brees is in their prime. I talked to Mike Triplett, who covers him for ESPN over the weekend, and he's like, look, man, I think his passing attempts are probably actually up from last year when it's all said and done, even with Graham being out of the mix. And you go back a few years ago to when Brees threatened Dan Marino's record for yardage the first time around when he first cracked 5,000. Lance Moore was his leading receiver. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't seem to matter who's around him. They're very high on Brandon Cooks. But to me, you know, this is more like a 4 or 5. You know, this is a team some people had in the Super Bowl last year. But it's not, you know, teams change in the offseason.
It's a fairly common training camp feel to it.
You've sure. added,
Graham leaving gives it a little bit more oomph because he's one of those guys that you're surprised when teams let a core player go. I think overall this season, it is a fascinating storyline because the perception nationally is that you're watching Drew Brees to see if he's still got it, if he's still that. For a while, he was in the same breath as the best in the game. Now you're sort of checking to see if he's still in that breath with the perception among some that he's not. So I think over the course of the season, Drew Brees is up there with the most interesting storylines to see if that's still the reality for him.
Yeah, it's probably 5 or 6 for me. And I think it is because of the Brees, you know, angle to this entire thing. If the Saints are in playoff contention this year after the offseason that they've had, I think it's one of the stories of the year in the NFL. And it's going to be because of how great Drew Brees is. And so I don't know in training camp how much you're going to be able to tell about all that, but seeing all the changes for that team and what they look like, especially on the offensive side of the ball, is going to be interesting.
Next one would be, as he describes it, Peter King, Mystery Theater in Seattle. Will there be a Super Bowl hangover? Will Russell Wilson sign a new deal this summer? Will Jimmy Graham block? On and on and on. And, you know, just basically what are we going to see from a team that went to back-to-back Super Bowls?
Yeah.
This one's more interesting to me.
This is a 10 for me.
This is a borderline dynasty-type team.
Yeah.
If they were to win the Super Bowl this year, you're talking about one play away, a lot of people would feel, from being a 3-time Super Bowl champ. Now, that's, you know, if they were to win the Super Bowl. They almost got bounced in the playoffs by Green Bay last year, and we would be talking about a different conversation right
sure.
now. But they didn't. And yeah, I'm with you, Tony. This ranks pretty highly with
Look,
me.
This is a team that we talked about it immediately after the Super Bowl. You don't see teams that potentially are going to win back-to-back Super Bowls react after a game the way Seattle did. And the divides in that locker room that came to light about Marshawn versus Russell and this entire offseason, Marshawn gets his contract. Bennett's not happy about the contract that he's got. Russell Wilson, how much money is he going to get paid when everything is said and done? There are a lot of storylines swirling around this Seattle Seahawks team. Can they still be the team in the NFC, or does Green Bay or somebody else finally replace them in that conference? I think it is the story maybe of the National Football League going into the year.
Spieth just got one back there on nine, huh? Just made a 15-footer for birdie to get one of them back. So still within two now of Zach Johnson and Adam Scott atop the leaderboard at the British Open. The next story for Peter King, the adaptation of a dolphin named Sue. He's trying to do a little play on words here. But Ndamukong Suh basically in Miami now, and the corresponding loss that is for the Detroit Lions. They bring in Haloti Ngata. They're different types of players. But Miami now, you know, with Cameron Wake having Ndamukong Suh to help him, who knows, maybe he's in for a 20-sack type season there. You look at Ryan Tannehill right now, and you look at his steady progression for the last 3 years, and now you look at the fact Jarvis Landry had a very impactful rookie season. They draft Devontae Parker. They bring in Greg Jennings. They trade for Kenny Stills. And they lose Charles Clay, but they sign Jordan Cameron. As long as he's healthy, he's proven to be a high yards per catch guy at tight end. He's got as good a group of weapons as he's had across the board in Miami.
It feels like an all-in offseason for Miami. It feels like over the last couple of decades they've had a few of those, and they never seem to pan out. So it feels like the same storyline you've heard from the Dolphins sometimes over the years. A little bit. So it's always interesting to me when a team clearly puts a lot of money into their offseason and says, we're going after it. Usually in the NFL, that doesn't bring a whole lot of success. So that's fascinating.
And for us here, obviously, Miami week two coming to Jacksonville.
Right.
And how important we've talked about getting off to a good start those first couple of games with Carolina. By
I'm
the way,
far more interested in the Seattle story, by the way. Because of the personalities in that locker room. I think Seattle and training camp will be constant nightly SportsCenter talk that's probably worth a listen.
All right, got a couple left on the list. We'll get to those in a moment, and we'll also take a look at the fan feedback spotlight. If you'd like to weigh in today, we asked you, in light of Ace Sanders being let go by the Jags, who is the next Dave Caldwell draft pick that's on the hot seat there? A little squeaky wheel over there. Getting the grease, huh, Johnny?
That's me.
That is you.
I'm in my own world over here. Parallel universe.
That's all right. So we'll get to the fan feedback spotlight coming up next as well. And I was about to mention, I had a dream last night that the Jags beat Carolina in the opener. And it was like an ugly, kind of a flukish, whatever. It was like, it was a weird, I can't remember the exact score, but it feels like it was like 17 to 15, like a weird 2-point victory.
Take
for
the it out, we can get it.
Oh, absolutely. And believe me, the reaction was, who cares? And they're 1-0. So if that, I don't know if that holds any significance or not for you, John, my dreams.
I had an odd dream where I was in some sort of meeting where the Jaguars leadership was there and Shad Khan was there. And for some reason, I had a piece of bread on my glasses.
Are you serious?
And there was a lot of concern over this. And as I recall in my dream, Tony Khan stepped in and was like, you know, Dad, it's just ozone. Don't worry about it.
Was that right?
Yeah.
This is what we expect from this guy?
It was sort of like,
it's just John being John.
It's fine. I mean, you know, there's some sort of hunk of bread on my glasses.
Was this a recent dream?
Yeah, you know how dreams go. So, you know, just very strange. But it was sort of written off as, that's sort of what we expect.
All right, there he goes. We'll call him Pumpernickel. He is
he's done far
Johnny
worse,
o.
was the thing.
The senior writer for Jaguars.com and a man held in very high regard, apparently, by Tony Khan. All right, with John Osher, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll return here live to EverBank in a moment on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, we're closing it out here on Jaguars today. They're not closing it out yet. There's still the back nine to go for the last groups out today, as Jordan Spieth among them has a birdie putt at number 10 to get back into 14 under par and you know, continue the quest for three consecutive major championships. Pretty amazing. Paul Dunn, after a shaky start, the amateur who led coming into today, going bogey-bogey to start today, has gotten it back with a couple of birdies, but still at 12 under par, and Spieth rolls it in nicely, a little downhiller.
Cool,
my good, I mean, he double bogeys, he comes back and goes birdie, birdie, and he's right back in it at 14 under par now. That unsightly five on number eight costed him, but he's got eight to play. He's a shot out of the lead, Adam Scott, Zach Johnson, Mark Leishman. I know Zach Johnson had to hit at least he hit three shots to get to the par five. I think is he playing 14 or 15? I think I saw him hit his third
he's
shot
playing
from the fairway.
15.
So he's playing 15
yeah.
right now.
And it feels like on this course, the more holes you have left, the better.
The better, right? I almost feel right. Yeah. I'd rather be a shot or two behind with three or four extra holes to play. It seems like I would rather
17 is daunting.
Right. But if I were as good as them, I would rather that. 17 is daunting. Mickelson made a triple bogey today on 17.
Did you see the picture of his ball?
I did not.
It actually landed on one of the porches at the hotel.
Really?
Yeah, it stopped on a porch at the hotel.
I love when you see the occasional, was it Miguel Angel Jimenez who played it off the wall on the road hole? You know,
yep,
you got that
yeah.
little concrete wall, or not concrete, whatever it is. And he played it off the wall a couple of years ago. I love those shots that you get to see. Zach Johnson. Smiling, he's on the green on some hole, but not particularly close to the hole. So, crowded leaderboard, a spectacular leaderboard, and we'll have you updated all throughout the remainder of today's final round. And who knows, maybe bonus golf beyond that four-hole playoff is how they do it at the British Open. I'm not opposed.
No.
You know what? I'm going home. I got a show on Sirius at 2 o'clock. I'll be sitting... Spieth and those guys will still be on the course wrapping up regulation. I'll be rooting for the four-hole playoff. You know what? I'll take Spieth winning in regulation because I really want to see him go for the slam at the PGA Championship. We've never seen it. You know, the only guy to do it, Hogan played the British Open once in his life, only made the trip one time, and he won it that year. He won the Masters, the U.S. Open, the British Open, skipped the PGA, didn't play it because – it wasn't that –
right.
I want to almost say it was almost the very next week. It was either a week or two later. It just wasn't talked about back
right.
then, you know?
Right.
I think Arnold Palmer popularized it in the 60s, the description of Bobby Jones when he won the Grand Slam. He was an amateur. He won the British and U.S. Opens and amateurs, and they called it Jones's
yeah.
Grand Slam.
It's interesting how both sports that sort of have that slam, tennis and golf, has changed over the years where now you wouldn't think of a golfer by choice missing one of these tournaments.
Correct.
One of these big tournaments.
You wouldn't, yeah.
It's sort of the same thing in tennis. For years, guys didn't play the Australian Open, and now when you look back, you can't believe that somebody would miss the PGA.
Right, an opportunity to win what now.
Because it's so career-defining.
And it's one of the
but
things...
But it wasn't 20... I mean, 40 years ago... It necessarily wasn't.
Yeah. To that degree.
And
sure.
Tom Watson, who won the Open here five times, right? And he was talking about how much it changed golf when Arnold Palmer basically made it a point that, look, if you want to be the best in the world, you got to go compete the British Open.
Right.
And Arnold Palmer was really the first one that said, if you want to be that, then this is where you have to be. And since then, it's basically been that way, that if you're want to be considered among those that, yeah, everybody plays in this tournament if you get the opportunity to.
Did Spieth just drive the green on this one? I'm pretty sure that's a par four he just drove the green on.
He's
on,
feeling it.
On is it not? Oh, is it a three? Okay.
Never mind.
What hole is he playing? Oh, he's playing 11? Okay. Yeah, you're right. I'm looking at the wrong hole here.
That's different then.
He's birdie. it is different. You're absolutely right. He doesn't have a short birdie putt, but he is on the green safely on number 11. All right, let's take a look, guys, at the fan feedback spotlight while we've got a few moments here. And it's brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. We asked you today, who is the guy who is a Dave Caldwell draft choice that you think is on the hottest seat? Go in terms of a roster spot. Tony, what kind of reaction do we get on that?
Here's what we got from Cristiano. He said Jeremy Harris. Stevie also said Jeremy Harris. From Ocho Fisho, Josh Evans. From Matt, Storm Johnson. And Demetrius said Storm Johnson with drafting TJ. Denard steadily improving and Pierce's potential. I don't see him making the cut.
Yeah, I saw some other Storm Johnson nominations out there as well. Who didn't hashtag it? You probably didn't see those. I think that's a solid guess. I think Jeremy Harris, they it's a good problem to have. They have a lot of good
yep.
players at that position. But everything I've heard, he continues to catch the eye of the coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a numbers game, though, John. You've got the top four guys that we've talked about a lot with McRae and House, Grotz, and Colvin, in whatever order you want to list them. You've got Nick Marshall kind of as a wild card. Maybe,
and I'd be surprised if Nick wasn't on the team in some capacity.
Right, because you think there's the opportunity for another team to pluck him off the practice squad, among other reasons.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and I just think when you acquired him, you acquired him with the understanding that he probably was not going to be an NFL cornerback in his first year as a rookie, ready to do this yet. So you acquired him with the idea, same as Sterling, that you were acquiring a guy who you wanted to see how they developed over the long term. Well, if you're going to do that, then you sort of mentally have a spot for them to do that over the long term.
Right. Neil Sterling, of course, the Jags seventh round wide receiver in a tight end's body, basically, right?
And on top of that, I think Jeremy Harris may have been the 53rd player on the roster last year.
Could have been.
He may have been the last guy that made the cut for them last year, and he's got to deal with all those other position players and Devon House coming in and all that other stuff on top of just barely having made it last year.
There's often a few more spots for a cornerback or a linebacker who we perceive as being down on the depth chart because you need special teams guys. You need guys who could run.
Sure. And that's something that was talked about during the offseason was that he was finally committed, it felt like, to the special teams aspect of what he was going to be asked to do. So does that make a difference for him? Right.
A couple of quick last things here from Peter King on training camp stories to watch. Either of these move the dial for you. One, how teams use the new point after touchdown rule.
To me,
I'm curious to see what the percentage is because I do think that there will be more misses with the extra point move back.
I think there'll be more misses, but I think it'll be interesting to see how teams experiment with it a little. But while I think there'll be more misses, I don't think it's a risky enough field goal that coaches are going to say my guy can't make this.
So we're going to go for two.
I mean, I'm assuming my guy can make that distance of a kick, or he's not on my roster.
Agreed, but I'm curious to see if Chip Kelly, who always went for two on his first touchdown in college, if he had kind of adopts that, and or if it will one or two coaches say, you know what, even though we feel like we can make a lot of these, certain situations we're going to try to put the pressure on and really maybe make the other coach uncomfortable, see if they can get him into a situation where they're chasing points.
If I was a coach, I wouldn't change my approach based on that. But you may see some coach who's given a little bit more to trusting the percentages and the stats maybe go for it.
Zach Johnson coming up short on a birdie attempt. He remains at 15 under par at the Open. And finally from Peter King, Jay Cutler trying to prove to yet another regime he's worth the trouble. What a one for me on this. Other than the fact that, as anyone who plays fantasy football will be invested to some degree in the Bears with, Alshon Jeffrey and Forte and Martellus Bennett and those guys, I don't care about Jay Cutler.
I have a higher level of interest than you.
You're a Vandy guy.
I'm a Vandy guy, so I'd like to see him figure this thing out. But
it sounds like you're more tired of the Cutler story than the Brady story.
I guess. I mean,
I'm going to cycle back to the top of the show with that one.
It's just Jay Cutler. And finally, let me leave you with this, the thought for the day that I picked up on the way in today. You know, we get one every Monday. I got this. Those who dare to fail miserably can achieve greatly. Well, they said can. They can also fail miserably, right? So if you dare, just because you dare to fail miserably doesn't mean you will achieve greatly.
I'm still waiting for that second part. I've experienced the first part a lot.
You will achieve greatly.
But that's not the thought of the day.
No, well, the thought of the day is John with a lump of bread on his glasses. That's really brought to you every Monday by Wild West Guns and Gold, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. Wild West will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. And as John Osier will tell you, you can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Visit Guns for Jax, that's guns, the numeral 4, JAX.com, or visit them on South Lane Avenue here in Jacksonville. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. All right, that's going to do it for us. Enjoy the rest of the Open. Mark Leishman now, is he your solo leader?
He is.
It's 16, so he made that bomb from the back of the green. Leishman's making everything he's looking at right now, and probably the least guy I'm interested in winning this thing among the seven or eight guys at the top of the leaderboard right now. A lot of other guys I'd rather see win it than Mark Leishman, but I don't have any say in the proceedings now, do I? So, for Johnny O, for Fat Tony, for Joe Fortunato, for Tyler Devitt, I'm Mike Dempsey, signing off on this Monday. Stick around, XL Primetime, coming up next right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.